Welcome to Black Chicks Bible Study. We're on episode 57, Philemon. Apparently, this is one of the most undisputed books, like letters from Paul. So Paul probably wrote it.
Really? Because it's funny because this sounds the most like Paul to me, too, because he's an a-hole a little bit.
Really? I didn't even pick that up at all. Really? I'll have to pay attention to that this time.
Yeah, I feel like he's being his Paul self that I didn't like. I can't remember exactly which book it came out. I remember like kind of being like, oh, I don't like Paul.
It was really early on.
Yeah, and I was like, and this book reminded me of that book kind of, and I was like, oh, there's that thing I didn't like.
Oh man, well, we'll have to unpack it. This is so short. It's only 25 verses, one chapter, just one short letter. Do you want to go into your word of faith? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember something about kind of just letting people just make their decisions, kind of something like that. Basically, I think it came from that verse where it was like, warn someone once or something, and you don't need to warn them more than two times, just let them kind of be. I feel like, you know, there's an opportunity where I can kind of give someone maybe advice or even a warning or any kind of maybe just wisdom or precaution or anything to just do it and then be done, you know, not be so emotionally invested in whether or not they're following through or if they are taking what I would think is the correct action, which might not be the correct, you know, thing. But anyway, just kind of not being so attached to the outcome of whatever the situation may be. And I will say I did have opportunity to do that, but I don't think I really connected it until like I was, you know, before we recorded, I was thinking about what it was that I had, you know, picked as my word of faith. But just, yeah, I just had a friend who just, I don't know, wasn't being a very good friend, I guess. And basically, yeah, I just told him straight up how it was and just kind of that, like, you know, just that thing of just like, you know, if you want to be a good friend, you know, just, you just have to do it basically, you know, and like you can't expect people to wait around and be patient all the time while you're being a shitty friend, you know, like that's just not how things work. So, I mean, and that was it. And then it was just like after that, I felt like, you know, my friend was a little salty about it, but I didn't really care. You know, I just said what I said. And I think it helped that I was moving, honestly, because I just really also didn't have any time to think about it or be invested or follow up or care to, you know, see what happened, where I think maybe if I had less on my plate, I might just, you know, check in a little bit more and be like, oh, like, what's going on with this and that? And I just, but at that point, it was just like, you know, I felt like, okay, well, I said what I had to say, and that's it. Whether or not this person runs with that information or throws it away, it's none of my concern.
So it's still kind of up in the air how they're going to respond beyond that initial kind of saltiness?
Yeah, basically. But it's also like, I kind of don't really, I don't want to say I don't care, but it's like, I'm either way, I'm just like, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very easy for me to just be like, well, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, sometimes it comes down to a maturity level thing too, I think, where I feel like this situation just might be one of those things where, you know, this person's young and wanting to do them and have fun and cool, like they can do that. But, you know, they just can't expect everyone to wait for them to catch up.
Yeah, it does help when you have other stuff going on and can't get too emotionally tied up in where they're at.
What was yours?
Mine was about, it was from that verse of like, to the pure, everything is pure.
Oh, yes.
That one kind of hit me and I was thinking, you know, I want to just focus on how I approach things and not always be kind of looking over my shoulder or thinking it might turn out bad. I think I've gotten good, though, at what you're talking about, the like having boundaries and kind of like if there is divisiveness or bad vibes or whatever, like I'm learning to adjust my proximity to things that are like not good for me. And my boundaries have been good. But then I also really want to maintain that thing of like come at things with a pure heart and expect things to turn out well until they don't. I had this general idea in my head because it feels like it's been a long time since we recorded.
But I would say, yeah, it has been. I was like, I feel like a lot's probably happened. Like, I'm in a whole new place. I have a new animal. Like,
right. You moved. You got a new bunny.
I'm like, I don't know what's going on with you because we haven't really chatted. I'm like, I don't know. I know you've been very busy with work and stuff, but yeah, it feels like it's been a really long time.
I definitely feel like April has flown by. Yeah, I was holding an idea in my mind of like faith. I just didn't remember that that was my exact word of faith was like the purity thing or thinking the best. But I guess I did. Generally, I noticed that I've been approaching people that I don't know that well, but have to work with or something with a lot more of a blank slate. Of like, I think I have goodwill toward people, but I also like don't care a lot of the time or don't. I think I was trying more to like give people the benefit of the doubt and be encouraging and treat people like I would want to be treated, I guess. Especially like I think I was, but I can tend to be kind of detached and like very just bottom line of everything and not super. And just assume everybody would have it out for everyone else. Like, I can kind of just think that way by default. So I've been trying to just think of myself as like, oh, everybody wants to do well and we're all on the same team and everything's going to work out and everybody's doing the best they can. And everybody, like, just having the spirit of collaboration and cooperation. And I think it's made me feel more comfortable and just happy, you know, interacting with people and more feel more like part of a team, I guess. There's the gamut of different things to deal with and whatever. So yeah, anyway, that spirit of collaboration is interesting because this letter we're about to unpack, I looked up a little video about this. I think it was the Bible Project video, you know, those like little drawing animation videos or whatever they do. And they mentioned the Greek word koinonia, which is like the spirit of sharing or like togetherness, collaboration, sharing. It's like if you receive something and your neighbor receives it with you, you share it between you or whatever. It's like this Christian kind of idea. And I remembered that word. And I was like, did we go to a church called Koinonia? Why do I know that word? So I texted my dad and I just wanted to shout out my dad and also read what he wrote.
Oh, okay.
Because he wrote a little thing about it.
Okay.
So this is from Jim Tyree in Milwaukee right now. So I said, did we ever go to a church or some type of community called Koinonia? He said, yes, the farm community was 10 miles from Americus. Americus was a small town in Georgia that we lived in for like 5 years. It was founded by a brilliant theologian named Clarence Jordan, who wrote the Cotton Patch version of the New Testament, contextualizing it for the local people. For instance, instead of Jesus being on the road to Jerusalem, he was on the road to Atlanta, and all the cities he visited were in Georgia.
What?
He and the farm community endured violence and terrible persecution because blacks and whites lived together, and they actually started what became Habitat for Humanity. So my dad worked at Habitat for Humanity for like much of my growing up. The larger community boycotted their farm produce, so in order to survive, he invented mail order food shipping and shipped pecans to his supporters all over the country and the world. I'm surprised you remember it, meaning that word koinonia. You probably went out 2 or 3 times just to visit and have some potlucks. I was board chairman for most of the time we were in Americus. But I just remembered there being something called that. People joining together, the spirit of community. I think I saw in that video too of like, they pointed out Paul didn't mention Jesus or the resurrection at all in this letter. And that is very rare for a letter from Paul. And it's because he's, by the simple act that he's doing in the letter, he's acting out the gospel without having to really talk about it. He's just being it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't it seem odd because it's such a short little letter in here and I didn't even remember this being a book in the Bible?
Yeah, it seems like a little random. It was short. again, like I said, this was for me, like that tone of call that I didn't like, that felt very pushy almost, or grandiose in a way. But yeah, that was kind of my overall thing. But I do, I guess I do like the idea though that like there is this, you know, kind of community or whatever that he's kind of started up, and they do are kind of expected to take care of each other. And, you know, when people come into town or I need a favor and this and that, like it's not a thing. It's almost just like that's how it is. So that I like, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't like some of the language Paul used. I'll say that.
I wonder if it's the translation issue, or because I'm even reading it now and I'm like, I don't know.
Like, for instance, like, I mean, I had a little, a good example would be verse 8. He says, this is Paul. He says, although in Christ I could be bold and order you to do what you ought to do, yet I prefer to appeal to you on the basis of love. It is as none other than Paul, an old man and now also a prisoner of Christ Jesus. So, like, it's like that whole thing, like, I could do this, but I'm not going to. But by saying that I could have done it, I just did it. You know, like, thing that was familiar to me, like, it's manipulative to me. And I don't like that. I don't know. You know, I could be bold and order you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just get this, like, dominate type thing that he's trying to do. Or, you know, I'm in charge here.
Yeah, that feels like something you should pull out if... So he's writing this letter to Philemon basically to declare that Philemon's former servant, his slave, Onesimus, should be freed, and the terms of his servant, his servitude should change, and he should be an equal. Philemon is like this church leader kind of that Paul like met and mentored or whatever. And then Philemon had this slave, Onesimus, who somehow had beef with him and then ran away, and Paul found Onesimus to be like really useful to him and had him as like right hand man, assistant type. And so he's writing to Philemon to tell him like this guy doesn't need to be your slave anymore, basically, right? I guess that flew over my head, that part about verse 8, because yeah, but that should be something you kind of say if Philemon had written him back or something, being like, no, give me my slave back. Then you can be like, actually, you know,
I don't even really have to ask you, first of all.
Right. But maybe Paul doesn't have time to waste, and he does want to be bold and make a bold move. So he's invoking this power preemptively and being like, here's what, you know, you're going to be in trouble if you resist me right now. Like, this is the only choice you have. It is kind of like a power move, you know.
Like a power move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, and sorry, we're skipping around a little bit.
No, but I think that's totally fine to skip around, especially in a letter this short.
Yeah. But in 17 also, I didn't like, he says, so if you consider me a partner, welcome him as you would welcome me. And then it's like, if he has done you wrong or owes you anything, charge it to me, which is, I'd like that part. But like that first part, so if you consider me a partner, welcome him as you would welcome me. I don't know, that whole thing too. Like, it's like, if I said to you, Lauren, like, I'm asking you for, like, to let my dog, you know, live with you for a little bit, it'd be like, you know what, Lauren, if you consider me a partner, then you better accept my dog. You know, it's like that kind of like, what? Like, I don't know. I just don't like that forcefulness almost, and kind of just like a, you know, it's like, obviously, you know, you and Philemon are like buddies, or you're in the same cohort, or you're whatever you want to call it, colleagues, whatever, like that. But it's
fellowship. They have this brotherhood of like.
But he's like leveraging that relationship to be like, if we're really brothers, then you'll do this.
Yeah. You know? But they do. You and I don't live by a code that we've agreed on. Like, I don't have expectations from you in any context. But if we had I do, but not really. Like, the farthest. I guess, like, yeah, he could have communicated it in a different way, but they do have this code that they're both, like, supposed to be accountable to. So it's almost like maybe Paul doesn't have, the stakes are so high, he doesn't have a lot of extra time. He seems to be writing letters left and right. Maybe he had 80 more letters to write that day. I don't know. But he's just, like,
he's in prison, he's got plenty of time.
But he seems to be booked. Like, maybe he's speaking all the time. Who knows? But it is a high stakes enough situation. They're talking about a man's life, you know? So I like the passionate thing of, like, look, we're both Christians. We're both following this code. Like, you know, the right thing to do, let your slave free. And like, I hope I don't have to tell you that, but you know what I mean? Like, I get why he might be leaning on him a little bit.
And then in 21, he also says, like, confident of your obedience, I write to you knowing that you will do even more than I ask.
Mm-hmm.
That too is like a whole, yeah, it's this whole power thing. Like, you know, you're asking for this man to be freed, but you're basically treating Philemon like your servant right now. You better, you know, please me even more.
But he's not saying please me. He's saying please God. And
he's saying, but what does he really mean?
And he's calling himself a slave of Christ all the time and a prisoner of Christ, and he's an actual prisoner. So he's kind of like, to me, that sounds like a vote of confidence thing too, of like, I know you're gonna do more than I say.
But if you knew that, then why are you throwing this other stuff in there? Like, you know, if you're really my friend, and you know, I could tell you,
you don't want to leave any, because maybe, like,
so you're not confident then, you know. If you thought this person was going to, like, there's no need to.
If there were a high stakes situation and there was somebody's life in the balance, and I was like, hey, you know the right thing to do. Like, please don't make me, you know, like, don't make me up the ante or whatever. I don't know, because I like that too when I hear someone above me, or they have this big ask, or they have like, and they'll be like, you're really smart. I know you can do A, B, or C or whatever. Or like, they make a comment of like, you know, I think you're going to go above and beyond whatever. Like, if I hear something like that, I'm like, yeah, it just makes me want to like do that. Or like, but here he is, it does come off kind of threatening, but I could see why, maybe because he's trying to get like win the life back of this man, you know?
Yeah, I guess also I'm just not really seeing it necessarily. Like, I don't see the situation as these high stakes. Like,
right, right.
There was this slave guy, like, I don't know. You know?
I wish we knew more about the dispute, like, because there is some dispute between Philemon and Onesimus. Like, Onesimus ran away for a reason. Maybe it was just that he didn't like being a slave, but there was something about, like, there was something between him and the master that went wrong. So maybe Philemon has some bad reputation that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think when I read it too, I was reading it more like a personal dispute too, not even between Onesimus and Philemon, but like Philemon and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
The whole part where he's like, formerly he was useless to you, but now he has become useful both to you and to me.
Mm. Like,
that part too just made me be like, I don't know, like, you're bartering over this guy that you both have different opinions, I guess, of where he's useful.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily that one is so much right, you know, above the other. Because there isn't much, you know, background on, like, yeah,
what happened.
You know, it just says, like, I guess somehow Onesimus found Paul while he was in prison and whatnot. I don't know if maybe when he was in prison, Onesimus just, you know, went above and beyond for Paul, or what the deal was, that now Paul's like, okay, we really need to, like, you know, take care of this guy.
Yeah, he's saying, like, he's in verse 10, I am appealing to you for my child, Onesimus, whose father I have become during my imprisonment. So calling it a father-son thing is like, oh my gosh, like, he must have really just earned his allegiance somehow and really been there for him. It is kind of frustrating that the letter's so short, but there's so much behind it that we don't know.
Yeah, and then there's the other thing too, where he's like, 12, he's like, I'm sending him who has my very heart back to you. So yeah, like you said, obviously they have a really deep connection, father, son. He's like, I would have liked to keep him with me so that he could take your place in helping me while I'm in chains for the gospel. And then he says, but I did not want to do anything without your consent, so that any favor you do would not seem forced, but would be voluntary. Again, I don't know, it just seems a little manipulative to me too. It was like, he's basically being like, I could have kept him and not said anything. You know, like, he's trying to, like, you know, but in my head, I'm like, do you have that right? Like, because you don't know the background. Did Philemon just send this guy there? Like, is it his slave? He sent them there to help Paul while he couldn't be there. And then Paul really took a liking to him. And now he wants him. I don't know. There's just a lot that I feel like it's questionable what the correct, you know, I guess, course of action would be as far as handling this guy, Onesimus. And it's also like, who does he want to be with? We don't know. Did he say he wants to be with Paul? Did he say he wants to be with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe, you know, like I could understand if maybe, yeah, he wants to like not go back, and he's the one being like, I don't want to go back. I'm, you know, here with you, Paul, and would really like to like be your secondhand man or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like then I could maybe understand. But I think that's also where, yeah, where we are getting kind of two different things, because I'm just not reading it as a like, this man's life is, you know, at stake, and you know, you
well, more, yeah, more like I guess his fate in this future and who he belongs to, and they are playing, they're kind of competing over this man. But yeah, apparently it was a huge radical thing to begin with, that somebody would stop being a slave and then be considered a brother in Christ, you know, just that he would have his freedom bought by the gospel or whatever. It was such a brand new thing that I guess that's why I'm allowing him more power moves or strong language. But this has come up before with Paul, to where we both in the past have been like, oh, what a jerk or whatever.
Yeah.
And but I guess maybe this is the me after I've read that book we were talking about, the 48 Laws of Power or whatever. Yeah. But I'm just like,
you're like, hell yeah.
You kind of have to, like, you're not going to found a religion without manipulating. That's what your job is. You manipulate reality into, like, I guess there can be negative manipulation where you have ill intent or ill will, or you want to trick people or whatever. But if you're upfront about what you're doing and you're just trying to be really persuasive and bold. Mm-hmm. If I pick up my Bible right now, I'm manipulating it. You know, I'm manipulating time and space in some way. So it's just like, what is your goal? What is your intent? And he really thought he was like on the side of the only true religion, the only gospel, the truth. And everything to Paul seemed like it was such high stakes, like life or death. So I'm like, okay, you're stating it boldly, but it's one of the first times somebody's tried to free a slave under the banner of Christianity. So I like that this is happening, because I never heard about this letter, really. It never came up. We never talked about it. But the fact that there's a letter in the Bible, which the intent there is to free a slave, basically. And Onesimus did come up in a prior book that I can't remember now, but I remember looking up that section, and part of it was Paul telling them Onesimus is going to come here and treat him like a brother. And I remember looking that up, and he had been a runaway slave. So I think it was a runaway situation where he could have gotten in trouble. Some people think he might have stolen something or committed a crime before he left. So that's why Paul is kind of like, okay, whatever he owes you, charge me, or whatever he skipped out on, charge me. And I just like that there's that kind of radical move.
I guess, I don't know too. I'm just like, yeah, if he did steal something too, then maybe Philemon has a
case.
Yeah, a good reason to want him to come back and work off his deed, or see him punished, mm-hmm. or whatever the heck else, you know. So, I mean, not that thieves and any other people who engage in, you know, maybe immoral conduct can't be like good people, or can't, you know, have a mistake or turn around. But it's also like, when did this happen? If he did steal it, why are you going so hard for him right now? You know, like as if he's like some true saint, you know, like he needs to be the second, like his morals are so unparalleled or something, you know, like why is he the one that needs to be? I guess that's my question too. Like, what was he doing down there for you, Paul, that you've become so attached to this man, you know? I don't know.
Probably just helped food. Helped him write his letters, and hopefully it was all pure things and nothing criminal or corrupt.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it was. I mean, I feel like we pretty much did read the end of the chapter. But
I do like that what he says in 15 and 16. So yeah, after he read that Paul is trying to make sure Philemon can act with consent and know what's going on, so it's not forced. And then in 15, he says, perhaps this is the reason he was separated from you for a while, so that you might have him back forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. I just liked that, like him searching for a spiritual reason of like, oh, maybe this happened maybe he ran away or got away and came to me so that he could really get to know the gospel and be transformed. And now he's coming back to you, but as a better thing than a slave, as a brother. And maybe that's the reason. 90% of the time, I don't believe that. I mean, there are reasons for everything. There are explanations for everything. I'm always trying to find the explanation, but I'm also always trying to find some like superstitious, like supernatural reason or something why things. So I liked him being like, maybe this was all meant to be, and I was supposed to have him and train him and then send him back. And
yeah, no, I mean, I like that too. It'd be nice to let something go and have it come back to you better.
Yeah, but although maybe not better for him, because he'd rather have this completely compliant slave that he can control. So maybe Paul is having to convince him, like, having a brother in Christ is better than what you were treating him as before.
That's true. Oh, and then I do like the part too where he's like, it's almost at the end, verse 22, where he says, and one more thing, prepare guest room for me, because I hope to be restored to you and answer to your prayers. Yeah. Don't forget to have my room ready. I just thought that was pretty funny.
I loved that too, just speaking on faith, like, I'm gonna get out of here one day and then I'm gonna come visit and just have a room ready. I'm hoping through your prayers to be restored to you. It kind of, as soon as I read that too, I thought of L. Ron Hubbard. Because there are people who still maintain a house for him and keep it spick and span, like he's gonna come back one day. I know I've mentioned this before, but it's just so, it blows my mind so much. I know people are waiting for Jesus to come back, but like, I think that's silly and wrong. But also L. Ron Hubbard, like, is just a guy who lived pretty recently, and it's funny that he gets the same treatment of like, I'm gonna be back after I die, like, I'll be back, so, you know, keep up a house for me. But I wonder if Paul ever got to visit him. I don't even know what happened to Paul after this incarceration, you know? I don't know.
Maybe in his other letters he'll mention something. There's still more Paul letters, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so who knows? But yeah, that was short.
Were you just angry at him the whole time? Like, where do you get off, you freaking jerk?
Pretty much. I was like, what a bully. But yeah, I was just kind of like, ugh. Yeah. Oh, and have my room ready. Sign off. I thought it was hilarious.
I read it more like, and I'm going to get out of here one day and we're all going to be friends again. Just get that room ready, like a statement of faith. And, you know,
I know you want me back so badly. I'm just going to get ready. But yeah.
Yeah, it would have been nice to know what the gossip was on Paul at the time. Like, all these people who were hearing from him, were they just happy to not have to deal with him in the flesh anymore? Like, oh my gosh, he's so much.
He's in jail.
Yeah. Or are they missing him as much as he wants to think they're all missing and needing him?
Right, yeah, who knows, right? Who knows? Yeah. He could have been really deep in his head, since he had, I'm sure, a lot of idle time in prison thinking all of this.
Oh, yes.
That might not have been true, but.
So how do you feel in terms of like, a takeaway? Or
I think the very first thing that popped out to me, or even when I was reading it, was the whole, and you read it towards the end just now, but basically the verse where he says, you know, in 15, perhaps the reason he was separated from you for a little while was that you might have him back forever. But when I read that too, it also made me think, you know, of just people who die and stuff too, like, maybe, you know, they're gone so that, you know, you can be reunited somewhere else forever later. Or just the whole idea, you know, that saying, if something's yours, let it go. If it comes back, you know, was yours all along, just that kind of thing. And just, yeah, I just kind of like that idea that, like, being separated doesn't always have to mean a negative thing or mean the end of something. It could very well be something got a fine tune up and it's the best edition yet, and hey, it had to leave to get that way.
So yeah.
So I guess maybe what I can take away from that too is just, yeah, not being so attached, I guess. Not that I feel like I'm that attached to a lot of stuff necessarily, but just, yeah, just maybe not, you know, whether it's an opportunity or a thing, an object, a plate, a friend or whatever, just kind of maybe accepting, okay, well,
let it be.
Yeah, let it be. And if we come cross paths again, we do. If not, like, well, cool.
Yeah.
So
I think
that was quite an evil.
Yeah, an evil cackle.
Jeez.
The more after we talked about it, I'm like, ooh, I kind of like the power moves from Paul. If I were in Onesimus, in his situation, I would want a Paul on my side writing a strongly worded letter. And so when I read verse 8, for this reason, though I am bold enough in Christ to command you to do your duty, yet I would rather appeal to you, that part. You know, I think my thing, I noticed that I had been trying to be so friendly and accommodating that I've been saying, like, even in emails, I'll be like, when there's no reason really ever to apologize, like, I'm sorry, could we do blah, 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 blah? Rather than say, I'm sorry, especially, I feel like a lot of women do this too, or we're kind of trained to be very apologetic and minimize ourselves. And today I was just reckoning with that, like asking myself, why do I want to come off timid at all? Like, I like when I'm more, if I feel strongly about something or want something to happen, I have to kind of be okay stating that in a matter of fact, bold way. Just like, this is what should happen at this time in this way. Like, don't.
This needs to be a time.
Well, I would only ever ask for, it's easier because I would be asking for things basically on behalf of a bigger thing, you know, somebody else or a project happening or whatever. It's always about something bigger, something different than just what I want in the moment. So there's really not anything to apologize for or shrink back about. It's just like, if there's a right thing to do in the situation, just say it. Even in my relationship, like, I want to be loving and sweet always, but if I don't have the time to, like, just be matter of fact and be like, you know what, make sure I maintain my boundaries always. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I was just thinking about that actually this week because I took off. I had off a couple of days so I could unpack and leave and all that. And then I remember, like, one of my colleagues messaged me over the weekend. And I was off Monday, so I didn't respond. I didn't respond on the weekend. Normally I respond on the weekend, especially if it's nothing too crazy, but it was like, I was moving, I was in bed, I didn't feel like it. And I had days off, so I didn't. And then normally, you know, when I got back on Tuesday, I read the message and, like, I remember thinking, like, I was about to be like, oh, sorry for the delay in responding. But then I was like, no, there's no delay. I was off and it's on the calendar. You knew I wasn't here. So, and then I didn't apologize. I just said, oh, and responded. It's gonna be like, oh, sorry for the delay, because I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry that I didn't message
you. Yeah, why phone. Should you be? Yeah,
I didn't message you while I was off work. Like, so yeah. But yeah, so it's funny that you mentioned that, because, like, I literally just thought about that a few days ago.
Yeah, I think there's a way to find balance and combine the spirit of purity, like, see purity in everything possible, see the good in everything, and but also have that boldness. If there's anything you're in service of, just, you can be pure and bold at the same time. That's what I hope to be. Pure and bold. It sounds like a slogan for, like, a soda or something.
Pure and bold. Beer. Yeah, that sounds like a good beer.
Pure, bold taste. Yeah. Anywho, I can't believe we're on book 57. What is our next book? 58. Hebrews? Yeah.
We're getting a little bit back to the heavier chapters. This one's 13.
That's intense. Gotta gear up for that. I'm getting spoiled with these short episodes.
Yeah, I was gonna say, coming off of these little books. And then also, I mean, Hebrews, come on. They're pretty major.
Yes. Didn't we hear enough about the Hebrews in the Old Testament, though? I mean,
every page, yeah.
But no, that'll be interesting to see what that is.
Wow, I can't even scroll down anymore. So on my app, Hebrews is like the top of the app, and then it shows like all the rest. And at the bottom, it's Revelations. I can't even.
Mm-hmm.
We're really almost done here, fellas. Mm-hmm.
Fellas.
Whoever else.
You BCBSers. That's the name for our dedicated following. BCBSers. Thank everyone for listening. And that was Philemon, and we will be back. It just still sounds like a book that shouldn't be in the Bible, just because I am not used to it.
This is going to be really offensive when you cut this out, but what's a Jamaican's favorite book of the Bible?
Philemon. What? Philemon. Did you just make that up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. Philemon. Monk? Is that problematic?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know.
I like it, but you okay. know.
Well, we're keeping it in.
All right, cool.
You guys, anybody who wants to can write a strongly worded letter to bcbspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you're offended, let us know and I'll take that one.
Anyway, we will be back in 2 Sabbaths and we're going to go over Hebrews and keep the faith until then. We're at bcbiblestudy.com. We'll be back with more
Black Rich Bible Study.